This episode of the Off Course Podcast is brought to you by the new Array Putter lineup by Adele Golf. Blending various shapes and setups with a number of familiar and fresh technologies, the Array Putters from Adele Golf support the reality that golfers have a unique putting stroke and need variety in order to get something that best suits their game. For more information on Adele's Array Putters, visit adelegolf.com.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week is a couple very familiar names in the fitting industry, Mr. Ian Frazier and Marty Savich. Is that close enough?
Yeah, that's perfect. Perfect.
It's the best part of it. Well, gentlemen, it's awesome to have you guys here from Club Champion Canada. You're doing some great things out there. We see you on the YouTube space a lot. I see you every once in a while at some launch events. So it's good to sit down and chat with you today.
Definitely. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Dan. It's nice. We enjoyed jumping in the forums every kind of other week and stuff for a while there. But I think this is always a fun format when we get to kind of shoot direct and kind of do something in person. So a lot of fun to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, guys, if you want, I assume there may be a couple listeners who aren't particularly familiar with your situation there up in Canada and the amount of work you guys are doing. So can you lay the groundwork a little bit as to what your daily looks like? You do quite a bit of in-person fittings, and there's a fair bit on the YouTube that goes on.
Yeah, so, you know, business for us now that we're part of the Club Champion group starts off the week with filming on a Monday for Mike and I. So we'll film our Toronto location. We're in the Mississauga location today. So we'll film for probably 7 or 8 hours on a Monday. We try and, you know, we'll do our live Q&A around 1 o'clock, and then we'll film 4 other segments for that week. So we give that to our production group, Fourth Frame Films, who do an amazing job for us. Two awesome lads, and
they make us look good.
They make us look good, and they make us sound smarter than we truly are, and which is great. But it's a great way to start the week. A lot of people dread a Monday. I absolutely look forward to next Monday because it's our next opportunity to film. And then the real work kicks in on a Tuesday. So Tuesday to Saturday, the studios all across Canada are open, and Mike does a lot of fitting nowadays. He kind of runs the field when it comes to the sales and fitting team. We have an operations and back-end team now as we've grown as a company. And my sort of focus is to do a little bit on the fitting side of things, but mostly focused on the marketing and media for the rest of my week.
Okay. And I think the one common conversation I love to have with every group that's out there is, what is crazy for you guys? At what point of the year do you get that tiny little lull and then move directly into crazy? I've heard that Masters Week drives a massive piece of that. Is that true for you or no?
Yeah, I mean, our crazy kind of starts, I would say, PGA Show Week. Like once customers know what's coming out, and obviously we get to see it, you know, July, August, September, and by the time it hits, we're kind of bored of it already. But crazy time is, I would say, Feb 1 until
Groundhog Day.
Yeah, kind of July 1 is nutty. It's crazy. Like, we've got the bays are full. We have guys that text Ian and I going, hey, like, my friend wants to come see you. I'm like, he can come at 7 p.m. on a Friday night. I mean, not the funnest Friday night for me, but that's the only time we'll get customers in right now who we're just so fully booked. It's wild.
Okay. As long as he brings beer, right? 7 o'clock is that cutoff. There's expectation at that point. Yeah. Have you noticed any trends so far this year of companies or products that are just really rocketing to the top of the list in the average fit for you?
Across the board, Dan, and year on year, it's so spread. Being brand agnostic, it really does spread the sort of utilization of the brands, the models. I think coming into this year, the big buzz was talking about forgiveness and maximizing performance through the 10K models. I really haven't seen it. You know, I look through our sort of reports and what's selling, what's moving out the door. We're really not moving more of that stuff than any other year. The forgiven models are what they are, and they are for a specific customer. But it's so bespoke in here. You know, if you pull that drawer open, there's 50 driver options, head options. You look up on the wall, there's 115 driver shaft options. So it's very seldom you see significant trends. It really is a really widespread, which is what we love about doing it. It's what we think our true value proposition is to our audience.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most common criticisms I hear as just a general golfer when I go out and play with the guys or sit around and have a beer in the clubhouse afterwards. Most of them say, well, everyone has the club that fits well for them, or that they fit too many people into, so it's their automatic go-to. I'd love to know what kind of challenge is that, and especially when you work with the folks who are in the office with you or in the bays with you fitting, is there has to be a little bit of that component where you try to avoid leaning on certain heads, or you get a little bit comfortable. Maybe one has success three times in a day, and then you might look to it the next day as like the first option. Is that a hard thing to stay away from as agnostic?
It's well, I mean, you definitely have your favorites, don't you?
Yeah, I think every fitter has a favorite. I get the gears in the office of what my favorites are, but it does seem to work for, you know, once you can categorize people into speed, it, you know, you can kind of go towards a certain weight and flex or a certain head. And obviously there's a lot of low spinning heads out there, and we see a lot of customers that need to control launch and spin and obviously tighten dispersion. So you can kind of have your secret weapons under your arm, but that, you know, you could put in their hands right away, and it might reduce certain things really quickly, which could make the fit go faster. But the other downside of that is if you pull that magic combo right away, it can shorten their fitting experience. It's not that we want to get them in and out as fast as possible. It just, sometimes you hand something to a client and it works and you're like, I can't do better than that. So I definitely have my go-tos.
But there's matchups as well, and that's that type of thing, you know, like with every year when there's a trend, you know, I remember when SLDR came out, and obviously heads of that era really needed specific types of shaft that maybe slightly moved the dynamic loft a little bit on the higher side and initiated a little bit more deflection in the shaft to create that launch that people really needed. So it's really dependent on the trends of the manufacturers as well. As we see MOI in the sort of heads going up, we're actually hearing shaft manufacturers talking about the shaft design being more forgiving. So the ability to take an off-center deflected strike and minimize the effect of that. So, you know, it's just, there's so many layers to that. Honestly, we wouldn't, you know, we could probably do this podcast for 7 hours and we would still be diving into the weeds of all the nuance of how the heads and the shafts work together and the different load types that we see in the bay. And that's not to mention you line up 10 people and every one of them feels the shaft differently. So they'll give you different answers to the way that club feels. You have to interpret that feel in terms of, okay, well, I need to give them a little bit more of that while taking a little bit of what we want in the performance stake. So that's why we have so many options out there.
I think the other thing too is some customers can't give you an explanation to what they feel. Like I'll get people and they'll be like, how's that feel? And we ask the question a million times, like, do you feel it here? Do you feel it there? And they're like, I'm not sure. Those are the toughest fits. Cause if there's no feedback to the fitter, you gotta tell me what you like the look and feel of, cause that's half the battle. There's times I can give you the driver that maybe looks the ugliest with, you know, bright, ugly shaft or whatever. And, you know, some people would hit it great, but they just, if they don't like the look of it or the feel of it right away, numbers are great. And obviously I'm going to, you know, prove those numbers work for you, but you got to know what you're looking for feel wise.
You say that, Mike, but 10 million posts later on THP, I've never heard anyone be that critical about it. They'll play anything that fits them, that works well for them.
they just turn the process over to the fits of them. They just go along with what we say.
That's good.
Oh, man. So the other question I have before we really dig into the big questions would be around the ticking clock that exists in a fitting. I've heard this countless times where someone goes in and they feel like they've gone through a gauntlet. And listen, I'm not here to criticize the everyday golfer. I know what I do on a weekly basis, and it's probably not enough to hit 200 balls within an hour and a half fitting period. But does that become a challenge where you know there's only so many good strikes in a given day or given hour for a golfer, and they get in there and you can't seem to quite get them there? That has to be a big concern.
we literally have a structure of what we want the fitters to do in a fitting when it comes to, say it's a driver fit. Our fitters know that they have a specific amount of shots to get them warmed up. Then they have a specific amount of shots to pull some levers and try maybe some different things. So maybe you're trying to reposition center of gravity. Maybe you're trying different weights of shaft. Maybe you're trying balance point shaft. You maybe go a little higher balance point if you're taking a heavier head weight. And then they have a specific amount of time to really dial in. Once they've saw what works in the bay, they have a little bit of time to really dial that in. And then finally, they've got a certain allocation of shots to literally hammer home, look how good this thing is. And actually go to your driver. Let's go back to your driver and let's take, now that you're swinging great and you're fully warmed up, let's take your driver versus this fitted driver, and we're going to truly show you how much better it is. So there's a time allocation and a shot allocation so that we've literally done this so many hundreds of thousands of times. We know how many shots it's going to take for every segment of the fitting to take place.
Okay. Well, how about this question? This came from a THP. They're asking what the best advice would be to plan for a fitting. Is there something golfers should do? Should they go and get educated on products they're interested in? Should they watch all your YouTube videos to make sure it's something they want to get fit in and it's, you know, it's excelling? Like, what do you hope golfers come into a fitting with?
An open mind.
Yeah.
An open mind.
Slow down, Ian. Come on. This is crazy.
An open mind and a well-oiled golf swing. I think if people came in having done a little bit of practice and they're sort of, even just their hand-eye coordination is sharp, they're striking it pretty centered. As a club fitter, I only ask for one thing, is just give me consistent contact. I don't care if that's in the toe. I don't care if it's in the heel. Just make sure it's not every shot's different. So that if we see a specific delivery, right, and that doesn't vary too much. There are things that are constants and there are things that are variables. The club path and the angle of attack typically are constants. No matter how spread the variety of shots that you're going to hit is, those two things won't be dancing around too much. And I make a big point of somebody who's struggling to show them that. Look how consistent you are. You don't feel like you're consistent, but it's the one thing that isn't consistent: club face and strike point. Once those things are sort of contradicting one another, we have a really hard time. You leave the face open and you hit it in the heel, it's going way right. You shut the face, hit it in the toe, way left. And then the next thing, your face open with a toe strike and it goes dead straight, right? So if you can't replicate any consistency in those things, club fitting is awfully difficult.
So when it comes to something like that, I feel like golfers tend to turn a fitting into a range session where they're like, well, I'm going to manipulate this in my swing to try and do this to accommodate. Do you see a lot of that too?
Yeah, I mean, we'd call it a range. Yes, there's times where you have to take golf balls away from the client and let them relax. I did a putter fitting this morning and the guy rattled off 9 putts in maybe 0.3 of a second. I've never seen anything like it. So I had to hold on to the golf balls and he had to ask for them because he's just going way too fast. The other thing too is, you know, we see a ton of different swings. You know, we've seen guys and girls that hit it great. We see guys and girls that hit it not so great. I think that comes down to a nervous thing. I think there's an intimidation factor.
Especially when they're being fit by you. I mean, that's a big deal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're a big deal. I bring the pressure. But the other thing like that, going to that is, you know, Ian and I see quite a bit of that. Guys will come up to us and be like, listen, I'm really nervous for this fit. Like, you know, I get it. Like, in a way, but don't be nervous and don't have such a high expectation that you're going to stripe it 315. We know you don't carry it 285. That, you know, foresight is going to tell you how far it's really going. You know, the open-minded stuff, but I would say come and relaxed is the most important thing. Like, there's no reason to be nervous. We can all hit it bad just as much as the next guy. So none of our fitters are judging you. And if we have to break up the session because you've hit too many balls, or, you know, for our older demographic, we split the sessions up. You know, they do driver, fairway wood, and maybe putter on Wednesday. And then Thursday we do wedges, you know, fairway wood, hybrid, whatever the rest is on a Thursday, and kind of give them that break. Cause it is a lot of golf balls. I'm with you. I practice once a year, and to hit 200 plus golf balls in a fitting, I'd be rolling around the ground. So
Do you ever feel like you need to turn the monitor off on some folks? They get so wrapped up in the numbers. I think this can be a two-part question where the golfers feel like they're not going to gain a lot if they don't know anything about the data that's being presented to them versus the guy who is just absolutely obsessed down to the 100s of RPMs a spin and can't contain himself but focus on every little bit of that as he goes through.
Yeah, I mean, so I actually find Foresight, the software in Foresight, is a lot better for this. TrackMan with the tiles across the bottom, I always found was harder because those tiles are laid out and people get obsessed with one or two. Obviously, with Foresight, you know, having down the left side and sort of the two columns of data, like, I can quickly just turn those off for a little bit. If I just want to focus, like, and we're pulling those levers and, like, I want to just be focusing. So we can change how long the screens stay on. And this is back to, like, Mike said, like, we control the fit. Ultimately, we control the speed, the cadence of that fit. And if we see it getting away from certainly us or getting away from the client, you know, we'll step in and we won't be standing behind them watching the shots. We'll literally be standing facing them, feeding them golf balls, slowing them down, talking to them, asking, engaging questions and things like that. I mean, a big part of club fitting is the psychology of managing the person that's in front of you and understanding their needs. And then also watching for the little bits of body language. When they're maybe feeling like they're a bit down, that they're not hitting it great, step in, talk to them a little bit about it. You know, are you working on some stuff with your coach? You're always going to have your eyes open and be so observant on the external things that are going on, not just what you see on the screen. So that comes with experience. That's something that's really difficult to teach. You need the reps on that. There's no book that can, you know, pick up and try and learn club fitting 101 and it tells you how to do all that stuff. It just comes over time.
I think one thing we try to teach our fitters as well, and it's something, I mean, not, you know, pumping my own tires, but something they do well is being able to have a conversation outside of the fitting in the fitting. You know, ask some questions that, you know, I'm pretty observant, you know, if they have a bag tag on their, you know, bag and, oh, you know, you play out of
Augusta,
you know, yeah, you play out of Augusta, you know, I'd like a tee time or, you know, these simple things just to kind of get their mind off it. Cause I think they get so focused in these, you know, 20-foot wide bays, they feel their vision almost starts to narrow in and they just keep rattling balls. And then I would say the second thing for us is you get someone who just keeps firing balls and not really listening in a way, take them off the range and put them onto a hole, like a digital hole. And all of a sudden their focus goes, oh man, I got to hit this fairway. Now they start to think about it a little bit more. I find that helps a little bit to kind of slow the fitting down.
That's interesting. That's a very interesting point because, yeah, I mean, once you get to the range, the discussion about rapid fire becomes inherently problematic. It just changes the way you look at just about everything. I assume that plays a big role in forgiveness as well, you know, trying to see what will work and what may not work from something like a driver head.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And we're advocating right now that the launch monitor companies change their software to the point where, like, if we're an Arcus user and we are basically looking at the data from a stroke gained perspective, so we can be hitting it further, we can be hitting it, you know, maybe a little bit offline, whatever it may be, but we're going to get that feedback on how we played on a stroke gained perspective. I want that in the fitting bay. I don't think it's really what people should be hearing about anymore is, you know, that's 20 yards longer, you're going to be better. Well, yes, but what's the dispersion look like? Yeah. You know, what's your shot pattern look like? And I think that's where it comes back to a strokes gain standpoint. I can say to you, I can tell you you're 20 yards longer and whatever your dispersion is, but if I can tell you you're projected to be 2.5 strokes lower than you are right now, I'm more into that than I want lower scores rather than I want the potential to hit it further. I'm more into lowering my scores.
Interesting. One of the questions that came from THP was asking about, and I think this is once again a multi-part question, but they want to know if, first of all, who is easier to fit, a very skilled golfer or let's say like a 25, 20 handicap, on top of that, when it comes to when it comes to that level of player, do you think there's an easier component to actually fitting in that regard?
What do you like?
I like a mid to high handicap. And the reason I say that is it is definitely more of a challenge, but is potentially more life-changing for that golfer.
More rewarding for them to see.
You know, and more rewarding for us. You know, you pick someone up. I mean, Ian's had it, I've had it, and we're not promising this can happen. But, I mean, 50, 40 yards on a driver. And, you know, I know we're going back to talking about distance, but 10 yards with a driver, okay, let's talk strokes gained instead. But 50 yards with a driver, that is life-changing to whether they're a senior or a junior or a, you know, mid to high handicap 35-year-old, doesn't matter. We've both fit some tour players and some really low club handicappers out in the Toronto area. They're not, I guess they're easy because they've kind of worked with something for their whole life, maybe a little harder to convince to change. You know, they're not looking for distance. They're looking for dispersion and consistency in that. So yeah, I like the mid to high handicapper. It's more rewarding for me and hopefully for the customer.
Do you find that more of an impact on the fact that they maybe are less likely to have been fit previously, or is it simply just ill-fitting product that you can improve on pretty dramatically?
Yeah, I mean, ill-fitted equipment for sure. You know, especially we get a large group of ladies, higher handicap ladies that get fit by us, regardless of me or Ian, but like from all our fitters, and they're always the ones with the best feedback of like, these clubs changed my game. I'm not using my husband cut this 3-wood down for me, and it's an 80 gram bubble shaft piece of junk. And you give her something that, you know, works for her game. It doesn't mean it's ladies clubs. It just means it's a fitted golf club. They're the ones that always get the most, you know, call it bang for their buck or most performance out of a fitting.
So I tripped over the second part of this question when I was trying to ask it. But what I was going to mention was I've heard a lot of mid-range golfers, maybe again in that 15 to 20 handicap range, that say, well, I'm not good enough to be fit. And I think that's an incredibly ridiculous fallacy that needs to be challenged here. And I'll ask it in the most casual way and let you destroy it as you will. Is it more appropriate for a lower handicap player to get fit or a higher handicap player to get fit?
I would reverse the statement you made there that we hear the same thing. I'm not good enough to get fit. I reverse that and say, you're not good enough not to get fit.
Okay.
Right. Because it's ultimately the skilled golfer has the ability to make the necessary adjustments, whether it's the flight on the shaft or the golf ball or, you know, center of gravity on the golf club. They're the ones with the higher degree of skill. They can flight the ball. They can control the face. They can do all these things. The higher the handicap goes, the less ability we have to control that. So we need the design of the golf clubs, the capability of the golf clubs to be then enhancing what we are bringing to the table. And if that's a little bit less in skill and ability, well, let's maximize it through the equipment that we're using. And those are the people that the 15 to 20s are the ones that we make the biggest gains with. It's not uncommon that we turn a 15 to 20 handicapper in one season into a single digit golfer. That is not uncommon at all.
Do you find that clubs that are supportive of higher handicap players are a little bit more complex to fit? I mean, there's only so much you can do with an MB or a CB is what I'm saying. And then you move into these other types of irons. And I find that the handicap of, let's say, once again, 15 to 20, there's a pretty significant dynamic there where their needs are different for a lot of players. Some need launch, some need spin, some need distance. And I feel like there's a larger range of product that can fit them. You just need to find the right one. Is that a fair assessment?
It is a very fair assessment. Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, that's, again, back to opening the drawer and looking at 50, 60 heads. That's why we have such options, and you know, we have so many tools in the toolbox when it comes to helping people, so many solutions for the problems. It often lies in places where people would never believe it. We get people that say to us all the time, can I get that shaft that has a softer tip and it'll spin a little bit more? And it's like, well, why don't we just give you a golf ball that spins a little bit more? That's a much easier solution. You time that shaft great, and by the way, that is the role of the shaft, to be a timing device. It's effectively a spring. It's going to produce energy and it's going to create timing. So we're not looking for shafts to create launch conditions as much as the manufacturers will sort of tell you that in the marketing jargon. You're as likely to see someone who, you know, hits it low with a Ventus Black and somebody hits it high with a Ventus Red. Just that's what they time up the best. You know, we've done plenty of that type of testing. The likelihood is the ball's going to move more laterally than it is vertically with shaft bend profiles. That's we see more misses left and right than we do up and down.
So I had an interesting conversation with a local fitter a couple weeks ago. We were talking and I suppose more ranting about the shaft market being designed the way it is to say very specifically, this shaft will do this and this shaft will do that. While completely ignoring that if you put 10 golfers in a room, the likelihood that two of them swing the same is incredibly low. And in my belief, the results of those shafts will be wildly different or potentially notably different between the players who utilize them. Do you see a lot of that in the studio? And do you have a challenge when someone comes in and said, I want this shaft because this player hits it like this and I'm looking for that same mechanic, or the forever inevitable low launch or high launch, low spin production that's out there in every website?
Yes, I agree with the local fitter. I think he is absolutely spot on. If you know, just different swings, different load types will 100% influence the shaft to deflect and behave in different ways. Too many people think of club fitting in two dimensions. They think about it like we're looking down range and the thing is only literally going to move up and down. What happens if that softer shaft creates a little bit more sort of downward deflection, more lead deflection, and changes the rate of rotation of the club head? And then all of a sudden, the softer shaft that you think is going to go higher influences the face to close more, and we create less dynamic loft through higher closure rate. That totally negates the 2D view of what a shaft is going to do. So you always have to be thinking in three dimensions when it comes to fitting, and you can never just think of it as an up and down. It has to be in rotation.
Interesting. What do you guys think about this common trend right now that some of these long drive hitters are using regular flex shafts in a lot of ways? They're so soft, but the traditional perspective has been the harder you swing, the firmer the shaft needs to be.
We were there, weren't we?
We were at World Long Drive, and when we first started, I was the builder for like the Canadian long drive team, and these guys were bringing me, you know, Flywire, Triple X, you know, 75 gram Triple X. I mean, I couldn't even bench that. And they were, they swung it hard and they swung it fast. But, you know, we're at the World Long Drive and these guys are coming up to us with TPTs at, you know, 40 grams and the Acura, you know, FX 140 M0. And, you know, obviously the craze of what, you know, AutoFlex has given, you know, club fitting, especially for us. I mean, we've done quite well with it. That light, long, and soft has definitely helped increase, you know, these guys' speed. And, you know, they swing crazy fast, but their dispersion is still pretty consistent. They're going to miss it swinging at that speed pretty wide, regardless of a triple X 70 gram or a 40 gram, you know, A-flex, basically. Yeah. So, yeah, it's been pretty impressive and not shocking to see it, but, you know, I know Ian spoke with, you know, Martin Borgmeyer, and he's got TPT in his stuff. And all those guys are really trending on the light and long.
Yeah, the guys talk a lot about the wear and tear in their body as well. The softer shafts allow them to hit more shots. It allows them to get more reps in. You know, Martin talked a lot about that, about sort of protecting his body. And the TPT shaft that he uses really helps him with that. So It is fascinating. It really, really is. And, you know, again, shafts are just, they're timing devices. And when those guys time up that shaft in acceleration, it offers them more energy, more output. And that's ultimately what they're looking for. They're looking for 1 in 6 on the grid. They're looking for that freak ball that just is absolutely gone. So it makes sense in a way that they're going to this direction rather than going, you know, super stiff and super heavy, where they're losing a little bit of energy through the golf club.
So would you say that is just as critical to get the flex correct as it is to get the shaft correct in a fitting? And should golfers be willing to understand that it might not be the same, first of all, in all shafts, but it might not be the same, first of all, in all speeds as well compared to their buddies.
Yeah, we talk about weight versus flex a fair amount. And
yeah, I'm a big weight guy over flex. Like, I think we can...
We generally say that, don't we?
Yeah, we can take something regular and try to stiffen us up as much as we can, especially in the fitting process. You know, we still look at frequency a little bit and stuff like that on stuff that we build. So being able to play around with flex, I think, is, for me, a lot more interesting. And I base a lot off weight. And I know Ian does the same as well. So I say to some people, flex is just a designation. Who cares if it's a stiff or an X? You know, we can dial that club in and build that club exactly how we need to do it.
Yeah, and we've got 13 clubs for a reason. We need them to do different jobs. We've got all these scenarios. The golf course is, and around the golf is full of scenarios that we need to navigate. And it's not like we can have a set of tools that is so one-dimensional that they all offer the same performance. I mean, obviously the loft and length and lie angle of the club is going to offer us variance, but having different shafts in there as well is going to give us that option. You know, changing from, like, I hate when I see people just automatically order the same shaft in their three wood as they have in their driver because they like it, the driver. Well, the scenario is totally different. We have the opportunity to up on it off of a tee versus a club that you need to hit off the ground and off a tee.
Yeah.
And then it might be something that you need to, you know, maybe worry a little bit more about accuracy with the fairway, or you're trying to turn it over versus cut the driver. It's just, there's so many variables. You cannot just plug in blindly the same shaft from one and another and just think, well, just because I like it here, I'll use it there as well.
Again, for an example of that, even in from three wood to five wood, we sell a lot of five woods now, a lot of seven woods. The gentleman I had this morning, I mean, he was a certain shaft in the three wood and a completely different shaft in the five wood, because although they're both fairways, the five wood we were trying to create basically this lower lofted seven wood. Like, it's a bit of a monster club, but no shaft is in his fairway woods or his driver are the same at all.
Another question we got from a THP member was asking if there is technically a perfect setup at the top of the bag. I've been criticized for a long time about having what you would call a Franken set. It doesn't really make a lot of sense until you see me play.
Let me know.
Yeah, so I certainly don't subscribe to it, but I think for the longest time the assumption was driver, three wood, hybrid, and then irons, and it's become this conglomeration. We have hybrids that are between a fairway and a hybrid. We have hybrids between a hybrid and an iron now. Like, what is the safe bet there? What is reasonable to assume?
I mean, we were talking about this literally on Monday. I'm going to talk about my own bag for a second. Like, I've got some gaps in there. And, you know, I got a three hybrid bumped down to like 16 degrees or whatever it was. And I just said to Ian, I was like, you know, that's basically, two hybrid. And he goes, we're filling a gap. Who cares what the numbers? And I say, and the stupid thing is I say that to customers all the time. Honestly, Dan, I've had customers that have gone driver seven wood and then into a five iron. You know, it all depends on gapping and hitting a number. So only when it comes down to my own bag, I don't pay enough attention to it. But he's right. I mean, you're filling a yardage. It doesn't matter. There's no magic or no secret or holy grail of what is the top end of the bag. It's honestly, if you get fit and we fit the numbers and the gaps for you, who cares what it is?
Yeah, every club has his own job to do. And as long as the club does that job. I think, you know, when it came to Mikey, we talked a little bit about the player's ability to hit it high or hit it low. What do they have an easier time doing? So if I give someone high lofted woods, for example, the likelihood is they're going to hit it pretty high. Do they have the ability to hit it a little bit lower should they need to? And if they can't, I'm probably not going to favor that club for them. I need to give you both options. For example, when it comes to the 240 club in my bag, I'm moving out of being in a fairway wood right now into a hybrid because I wanted to start off a bit lower because I can hit it as high as I want. I never have an issue hitting a high. I do have an issue hitting a fairway, high lofted fairway wood low. So I never want to be that one dimensional in my bag and in my game that I don't have both scenarios in the locker. I think a golf club's like a squad. I don't even think you should have 14 clubs. I think, you know, this is quite easy for the guys who own the golf shop to be saying, the custom shop to be saying, but I think you need 15 or 16, maybe even 17 clubs in your rotation.
Yeah, down with 14 ways. That's what I'm talking about.
get in there. Get in there with more options. And, you know, when it comes to certain things, I know when the rough gets rough, really bad at my place, 4-iron comes out and 4-hybrid comes in, because I know in certain holes, if I drive it and I'm left myself in the rough, I can still get to the green with a 4-hybrid. I've got no chance with a 4-iron. So, you know, I'll switch those out regularly.
That's incredibly interesting. I would tell some of my jokes about being fairway free in 2023, but we'll leave that for another time, maybe over a drink or something, because I think there's one critical piece to this that I really want to discuss, and it wasn't asked by anyone, but it's a conversation that's endlessly and recklessly had for golfers, and that talks about really just genuinely overthinking loft in especially irons. We've become a little bit more aggressive, but my argument has always been that the results apply in the proper way to where that club makes sense at that number, and to stop worrying about the loft that sits on it. So I'll ask you two questions. Personally, what you think about that, but also, is that a challenge in your fittings when people come in and say, I don't want this club because it's got this loft and a pitching wedge and blah, blah, blah?
A little bit. The loft thing is a little bit of a challenge for people who are plugged into, you know, the kind of the gear world, and they kind of read some stuff, and they kind of hear people who are opposed. They're like, well, it's not a 6-iron. It's a 4-iron, you know, from back in my day. And it's like, well, the 4-iron back in that day was a blade. It had no additional face flex. It had no dive board technology. It had no ability to manage CG vertically. None of these things. So how the club is designed today is so different. And the need for the lofts to be where they are is all down to the design. It's trying to hit a specific height window out there. So that's the most important thing, is that can you still hit that flight window that you need within your sort of set? I always use the sort of old example of when Ben Hogan used to gap his clubs. He had a tree at Shady Oaks in Texas where he used to practice, and he would do his gapping, and he'd have his caddy stand side on, and his caddy used to watch, could he apex the golf ball in line with this tree? And then if he did, great, he'll move back 10, 12 yards, hit the next club. Is it apexing at the tree? And if it wasn't apexing at this tree, they would make the loft lie adjustment. So pre-launch monitor, they were figuring out that every club had to apex at the same height in order for it to be effective for him, and then he could control the trajectory off of that baseline. So I think people need to understand that that's what we're trying to do when we're gapping your clubs. We're picking clubs with that performance to make sure the peak height on your clubs is in the right spot. And if we do that, we don't care what loft it says in the club. It's irrelevant. It's entirely irrelevant. And we're back and forth from the loft and lie machine 7, 8, 9, 10 times in a loft lie session. The client doesn't even know what the end loft and lie is anyway. They're just happy with the result, and that's the way that it should be.
We obviously write that spec down, we can send it to them, but I mean, who cares what the lofts are, as long as it hits a number and you're happy with it. Now, I've never met someone, unless they're hitting it super low and it's not spinning, then okay, we have an issue, but I've never met someone who's looking to hit it shorter.
There is the player who comes in and goes, I'm not worried about gain and distance today.
Right.
You know, I just want to be more consistent. And then you tighten up the dispersion to go, well, but it's not going any further.
Yeah.
Always the first comment. 10 out of 10.
Or do you do pick them up, like, let's round like 5 to 8 yards, right? And that's a pickup. I don't care what anyone says. That's a consistent pickup of yardage. It's a little bit longer. You maybe have to swing less fast, and now you're a little bit more comfortable. They never acknowledge the little pickup in distance. So don't come to here and lie to us.
I've always found it interesting. A lot of people criticize the loft on a club head, but never have any perspective on what their actual dynamic loft is, which is probably the most important thing.
Well, and the one other thing that comes with that loft is obviously the spin ramifications of it, right? So if you end up with a little bit less loft, then they look at the spin and they go, well, I can't lose spin because I need to hit it higher. Well, spin is the third most important thing when it comes to gain and height. Ball speed is first, launch angle second. Then spin will play a very small part in that. If you want, we say it all the time, if you want to stop the ball, hit it higher. get ball speed, get launch, and get the angle of descent to stop your golf ball. If that golf ball is coming in, you know, at 38 degrees with 7,000 spin, or 46 degrees with 4,500 spin, the 4,500 spin is going to stop a hell of a lot faster than the 7,000 spin because of the angle of descent. What you want spin to do is regulate distance. It stops you having those fluctuations and one that goes a bit longer and one that goes a bit shorter. So I think sometimes these things are very misunderstood.
Do you think there are one or two pieces of information you can pull off Foresight that you would encourage people to look more at that they're not right now? Is angle of descent one of them?
Angle of descent is one. Dynamic lie angle is another. I think people don't really understand, you know, lie angle and the influence dynamic lie angle can have on the sole kind of efficiency through the strike, you know, I'll say through the turf, even though we're doing it indoors. But whether you're indoors or whether you're outdoors, there is a force against the golf club as that club is moving through impact. And if that toe is too much down, really more than 3 or 4 degrees, we will have a really hard time being efficient with the efficiency or smash factor, whatever you want to call it, because that club is so toe down. And we'll also have a really hard time start line if it's too toe up or toe down. So I don't think people really understand dynamic lie angle as much as we would like them to. And I think maybe the one other thing using GC Quad is club head speed. Because we are using a camera-based system versus a radar-based system, we are using hundreds of images pre and post impact, and we're taking club head speed at the image, the single image prior to impact, versus at radar is taking it at the point of maximum compression. So the club and ball are in collision as it's measuring the club head speed, which is obviously slower because the ball and club are colliding with one another. So, you know, the club head speed might be 110 on quad because it hasn't been deflected yet, and it might be 107 on TrackMan because it's in the collision phase. People don't understand that often. They'll be like, oh, I'm way faster on quad than I am on TrackMan, or vice versa. They need to understand why that is.
Okay. I got a couple more things before I let you go today. I think one of the most interesting comments you've made so far is mentioning the golf ball. And I'm wondering, is the last thing you guys do after giving a full bag fitting to someone, please say that play the same golf ball when you go out and play. Please don't play a bunch of different golf balls and can't figure out why you're not consistent.
I would say most of the times all of our fitters will start a fit. Once you've hit a couple, you know, warm up 6 irons, we get into an iron fit and we're really trying to dial you in. And before that's ended, we've already asked, what ball do you currently play? And we have a selection of some extra golf balls kicking around. I mean, the amount of balls we get sent for testing, we keep them in the bays. We've got left dash. We've got the lowest spin ball and the highest spin ball. And there's times we see with clients, we're like, here, just hit this. And all of a sudden the spin drops 300 RPMs or goes up 200 RPMs. And they go, wow, I'm, you know, so much more consistent. So I still think ball fitting is underrated. No, I don't think anyone does it 100% perfectly yet. I would like to be the first place to do it perfectly. We do utilize Ballnamic in a fitting. It's something I do with a lot of my clients. I tell them, okay, here's your recommendation. Go, you know, try a couple sleeves of the Bridgestone or whatever it's offered you. But once you find something you like, please play the whole season with those golf balls, because I do believe it makes a huge difference.
Do you think there's a percentage of golfers that run through fittings who actually do consistently use the same ball?
I would say the clientele that Ian and I see might be considered more of the golf junkie. So they kind of go a little bit by the gospel. If Ian or I suggest, yeah, hey, you should really try, you know, Pro V1X versus, you know, your Pro V1 is going to do X, Y, and Z. We will get emails 3 months later going, you know, clubs are great, but the best thing, you know, ever to happen was a ball change, which is kind of cool. So I hope people that are listening to this and ask or go through a ball fitting, you know, if they make a recommendation to change the ball.
And commit. Don't play that ball you found in the rough.
Exactly. have the discipline to stick with it. And one thing I always say to people is, if budget is is part of the consideration, then use last year's golf ball. Use something that's in the store or available for $20, $25 a dozen less. If that's what if that's the influence that you want to pay a little bit less, do that over going to a golf ball that doesn't have premium materials. We've seen enough ball testing, and we've seen it with our clients that the best golf balls give the best results. In 10 out of 10 scenarios, the best golf balls give the best results. Yeah. So, don't miss the opportunity with the one constant throughout the whole game to get that golf ball choice right. It's the only thing. We might only hit three fairway woods in a round, or three woods in a round. You're using that golf ball every single time. So don't overlook that one most important part.
I could rant on this for a while. We have so many more questions, but I'm not going to keep you guys much longer. I did want to give you a chance to throw out any PSAs or subtle rants that you hope people hear before they go into a fitting, especially with Club Champion either in Canada or here in the United States. And anything on your mind you wanted to share?
I don't know if it's a PSA, but I would say if you're coming to a club fitter like Club Champion, remember, this stuff is fully custom built to your specs. The fitting's only as good as the build, and our build teams in the U.S. and Canada, they're building right to your specs. So don't avoid that cost of, I'm going to go, a different route, or, maybe wait to buy, clubs later on down the road. But that custom club is fit to you. We're going to build it to you. It's going to last you maybe longer, who knows? But also remember, they're being custom built, so there's a little bit of a lead time there. So be nice to your studios and facilities when you're looking for your clubs. We are doing our best to get in your bag as fast as possible.
Okay.
I think the one thing I would say, Dan, is, to anyone who's never been through a fitting or going to somewhere new for a fitting, use the opportunity to, when you're working with that fitter, to build a relationship and use that to sort of allow them to advise you on your bag moving forward. The same way that if you went for a lesson, you're very rarely going to go for a lesson and never have one again, unless it's a bad experience, obviously, but you're never likely just to never have that lesson again or go back and see that instructor. Club fitters kind of have a different relationship with golfers, and I'd really like to see that change. I'd really like to see golfers utilize our sort of knowledge and skills, that once you buy a set, come back and let's check them. We offer it for free.
Yeah.
I mean, Loft and Lie checks are free. We might want to check, you want to bring us your ARCOS data, and we look at your strokes gains down with the three wood. Let's hit some of that. Let's see why that is. Okay, see that left miss is in there. Let's tweak the loft sleeve on it a little bit, and let's kind of go back to the drawing board and set you back out. Very much like a tour rep would with a tour player. It's little tweaks week to week to make sure the bag is absolutely perfect for when the sort of major season rolls around. So build the relationship. Try not to think of it as a one and done scenario.
When you go to a custom fitter who all we do is fit all day, there's no coaches here, there's no clinics, we just fit day in and day out. If we fit day in, day out, we care enough about that customer's clubs. There's a lot of customers that have my cell phone number that text me at 9 o'clock at night and go, need to replace my wedges, or what do you think of this wear pattern? And we do care enough to reply back and keep that relationship. I mean, we all have our dentists that we see, we all have our physio people that we see, we all have our people. So, that relationship with your fitters is ridiculously crucial.
I love the investment you guys take in that. It sounds like it's very consistent across the board, both here and there, that it's not done. There's an expectation that performance will exist or something will shift. And I hope people can continue to experience that, because I personally, fitting for me has changed the entire discussion. I mean, it makes a ton of sense. And while products are designed to support a large range of golfers, we all have incredibly unique swings, and there's benefits in every part of our bag. So, Ian, Mike, it was a pleasure talking with you today. It's always fun to see you guys on the forums, and we really appreciate the time you commit to our group.
No worries. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think this kind of format is probably a little bit more dynamic. And, as we do it again in the future, love to do part two, part three, part four, whatever whatever people will tolerate of our two ugly mugs.
Sorry
about that. Yeah. But no, I love doing it with you guys. The more opportunity we get to connect out into the golf community, the better it is for everyone, I think.
Well, I'll tell you what, folks listening in, I did start a thread on THP, the forum community, where you can ask very specific and pointed questions. And it sounds like Ian and Mike are willing to answer those at our leisure. So keep those questions coming. As long as they're hard-hitting and interesting, we'll bring them up in the future. And if you are looking for a new product or looking to refine your bag a little bit, take a look at Club Champion Canada or Club Champion here in the United States and get a really good idea of what will work for your game. And have fun if you're playing golf this weekend. I definitely am and can't wait. See you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.